The death of Robinson Jeffers last winter came at a time when his reputation was at a low ebb. During the 20s and 30s, his reputation was at its peak. World War II ended that. Since then, much of his work has gone out of print, and there has been little attempt to evaluate his true achievement. The Poetry Center hopes that this memorial program will help to begin a new recognition of the unique qualities of Jeffers' work. What are these qualities? First of all, I think we have unjustly lost sight of the real nature of the man. We have done this because it has been too easy to criticize the extremes of his poetry, his isolation, his violence, his lack of humor, his view that man is a small atom in a raging universe. But reading his work again, we begin to see the rebel in Jeffers. We learn of the student who distinguished himself in biblical literature, the classics, and various sciences before he went to medical school. We learn how he left medical school after 2 years to enter the School of Forestry at the University of Washington. Jeffers, then, is one of the few modern poets with sufficient background in the sciences to create a poetry that uses a fascinating variety of scientific images. In many ways, for all of his essentially romantic approach, he is the foremost scientific poet of the 20th century. More than any other poet, I think, he grapples with the central scientific problems in which we have been caught. Another irony has helped to obscure Jeffers' work. This is the irony of the open frontier. When Jeffers came to Carmel in 1913, by stagecoach, incidentally, from Monterey, Carmel was still wild country. But as Lawrence Clark Powell has written, Jeffers saw Carmel change from an obscure hamlet to a publicized artist colony, and then to a playground of the idle rich. The stone tower he built as an outpost in the world, by the time of his death, was surrounded by houses and an urban leisure class society had lost his real insights into the beauty and violence of nature. Yet, even those of us who are most city-bound begin to realize what we have lost in turning away from a knowledge and kinship with nature. And in reading Jeffers again, we discover the meaning of what we have lost. Finally, there is another important side of Jeffers' work that will lift him again into prominence. He has written that poetry must deal with permanent things and the permanent aspects of life, that one cannot lie in poetry, and that poetry must not say anything merely because it is popular or generally accepted or fashionable in intellectual circles. In a time of journalistic prose and easy, short lyrical poems, usually designated as fillers for the leftover space in magazines, he consistently attempted the big dramatic poem and the large themes. He taught us that poetry must be ambitious, even if it fails. The time will come again when poetry is not just read in short spurts, And then the dramatic philosophical poem will again have a place of honor, and Jeffers a special position as one of its chief protagonists. It is a privilege to welcome and introduce the two participants in this program. First, Joseph Micsack, the fine actor whom many of you have seen on the stage in various roles for the Actors' Workshop, will read from the poems and plays of Jeffers. On the second half of the program, Brother Antoninus will speak and read his new elegy to Jeffers. Brother Antoninus is perhaps the one important American poet whose work has been deeply influenced by Jeffers, and I think you will be moved to hear how one voice influences and is transformed by the other.
I'm going to read first a selection called Point Joe. Point Joe has teeth and has torn ships. It has fierce and solitary beauty. Walk there all day and you shall see nothing that will not make part of a poem. I saw the spars and planks of shipwreck on the rocks, and beyond the desolate sea meadows rose the warped wind-bottom fan of the pines, a fog bank vaulted, forest and all. The flat sea meadows at that time of year were plated golden with a low flower called Footsteps of the Spring, millions of flowerets, whose lights suffused upward into the fog flooded its vault. We wandered through a weird country where the light bent up from earthward and was golden. One other moved there, an old Chinaman gathering seaweed from the sea rocks. He brought it in his basket and spread it flat to dry on the edge of the meadow. Permanent things are what is needful in a poem. Things temporarily of great dimension. Things continually renewed or always present. Grass that is made each year equals the mountains in her past and future. Fashionable and momentary things we need not see nor speak of. Man gleaning food between the solemn presences of land and ocean, on shores where better men have shipwrecked under fog and among flowers, equals the mountains in her past and future. That glow from the earth was only a trick of nature's. One must forgive nature a thousand graceful subtleties. And natural music. The old voice of the ocean, the bird chatter of little rivers, winter has given them gold for silver to stain their water and bladed green for brown to line their banks. From different throats, in tone one language, So I believe if we were strong enough to listen without divisions of desire and terror to the storm of the sick nations, the rage of the hunger-smitten cities, those voices also would be found clean as a child's, or like some girl's breathing who dances alone by the ocean shore, dreaming of lovers. To the stone cutters. Stonecutters fighting time with marble, you four-headed challengers of oblivion. Eat cynical earnings, knowing rock splits, records fall down, the square-limbed Roman letters scale in the thaw's wear in the rain. The poet as well builds his monument mockingly. For man will be blotted out, the blithe earth die, the leaves sun die blind and blackens to the heart. Yet stones have stood for 1,000 years, and pain thoughts found the honey of peace in old poems. Science. Man, introverted man, crossed in passage, and but a little with the nature of things this latter century has begot giants. But being taken up like a maniac with self-love and inward conflicts, cannot manage his hybrids, being used to deal with edgeless dreams. Now he's bred knives on nature, turns them also inward. They have thirsty points, though. His mind forebodes his own destruction. Actaeon, who saw the goddess naked among the leaves, and his hounds tore him. A little knowledge, pebble from the shingle, a drop from the ocean. Who would have dreamed this infinitely little too much? Now I'd like to read a speech from Orestes from the dramatic narrative, The Tower Beyond Tragedy. Orestes has just come from having killed his mother Clytemnestra, revenging the murder of his father Agamemnon, and he is talking to Electra. And the gates open, the gray boils over the mountain. I have greater kindred than dwell under a roof. Didn't I say this would be dark to you? I have cut the meshes and fly like a freed falcon. Tonight, lying on the hillside, sick with those visions, I remember the knife in the stalk of my humanity. I drew and it broke. I entered the life of the brown forest and the great life of the ancient peaks. The patience of stone. I felt the changes in the veins in the throat of the mountains. A grain in many centuries. We have our own time, not yours. And I was the stream draining the mountain's wood. And I the stag singing. And I was the stars boiling with light, wandering alone, each one the lord of his own summit. And I was the darkness outside the stars. I included them. They were a part of me. I was mankind also, a moving lichen on the cheek of the round stone. They have not made words for it to go beyond things, beyond hours and ages, and be all things in all time, in their returns and passages, in the motionless and timeless center, in the white of the fire. How can I express the excellence I have found that has no color but clearness, no honey but ecstasy? Nothing wrought, nor remembered, no undertone, nor silver second murmur that rings in love's voice. I and my loved are one. No desire but fulfilled. No passion but peace. The pure flame and the white, fierier than any passion. No time but spheral eternity. I'd like to read now Apology for Bad Dreams. In the purple light, heavy with redwood, the slopes drop seaward, headlong convexities of forest drawn in together to the steep ravine. Below, on the sea cliff, a lonely clearing, a little field of corn by the stream side, a roof under spared trees. Then the ocean, like a great stone someone has cut to a sharp edge and polished to shining. Beyond it, the fountain and furnace of incredible light flowing up from the sunk sun. In the little clearing, a woman. A woman is punishing a horse. She had tied the halter to a sapling at the edge of the wood. But when the great whip clung to the shanks of the creature, kicked so hard she feared he would snap the halter, she called from the house the young man, her son, who fetched a chain tie rope. They, working together, noosed the small rusty links round the horse's tongue and tied him by the swollen tongue to the tree. Seen from this height, they are shrunk to insect size, out of all human relation. You cannot distinguish the blood dripping from where the chain is fashioned, the beast shuddering, but the thrust neck and the legs far apart. You can see the whip fall on the flanks, the gesture of the arm. You cannot see the face of the woman. The enormous light beats up out of the west across the cloud beats of the trade wind. The ocean darkens, the high clouds brighten, the hills darken together, unbridled and unbelievable beauty. Covers the evening world. Not covers, grows apparent out of it. As Venus down there grows out from the sky. What, said the prophet, I create good and I create evil. I am the Lord. This coast crying out for tragedy, like all beautiful places, the quiet ones ask for quieter suffering. But here the granite cliff, the gaunt cypress's crown, demands the what victim? The dikes of red lava and block, what titan? The hills like pointed flames beyond Soberanes, the terrible peaks of the bare hills under the sun, what immolation? The coast crying out for tragedy, like all beautiful places, and like the passionate spirit of humanity paying for its bread. God's many victims, the painful deaths, the horrible transfigurements. I said in my heart, better invent than suffer. Imagine, victims, lest your own flesh be chosen the agonist, or you martyr some creature to the beauty of the place. And I said, burn sacrifices once a year to magic, horror away from the house. This little house here you have built upon the ocean with your own hands, beside the standing boulders. For what are we? The beast that walks upright with speaking lips and little hair, to think we should always be fed, sheltered, intact, and self-controlled. We sooner more liable than the other animals. Pain, terror, the insanities of desire, not accidents but essential, and crowd up from the core. I imagined victims for those wolves. I made them phantoms to follow. They have hunted the phantoms and missed the house. It is not good to forget over what gulps the spirit of the beauty of humanity, the petal of a lost flower blown seaward by the night wind floats to its quietness. Boulders blunted like an old bear's teeth break up from the headland. Below them all the soil is thick with shells, the tide rock feasts of a dead people. Here the granite flanks are scarred with ancient fire. The ghosts of the tribe crouch in the nights before the ghosts of a fire. They try to remember the sunlight. Light has dried out of their skies. These have paid something for the future luck of the country, while we living keep old griefs in memory. Though God's envy is not a likely fountain of ruin, to forget evils calls down sudden reminders from the cloud. Remember deaths be our redeemers. Imagine victims our salvation. White as the half moon at midnight, someone flame-like passed me saying, I am Tamar Caldwell, I have my desire. Then the voice of the sea returned when she had gone by, the stars to their towers. Beautiful country, burn again. Point Pinos down to the Sur rivers. Burn as before with bitter wonders, land and ocean and the Carmel water. He brays humanity in a mortar to bring the savor from the bruised root. A man having bad dreams who invents victims is only the ape that God. He washes it out with tears and many waters, calcines it with fire in the red crucible, deforms it, makes it horrible to himself. The spirit flies out and stands naked. He sees the spirit. He takes it in the naked ecstasy. It breaks in his hand. The atom is broken. The power that masked it cries to the power that moves the stars, "I have come home to myself. Behold me. I bruised myself in the first mortar and burnt me in the red shell. I tortured myself. I flew forth, stood naked of myself, and broke me in fragments. And here am I, moving the stars that are me. I have seen these ways of God. I know of no reason for fire and chains and torture and the old returnings. He being sufficient might be still. I think they admit no reason. They are the ways of my love. Unmeasured power, incredible passion, enormous craft, no thought apparent but burns darkly smothered with its own smoke in the human brain vault. No thought outside, a certain measure in phenomena, the fountains of the boiling stars, the flowers on the foreland, the ever-returning roses of dawn." This next poem, "The Bed by the Window," seems to me to have a kind of humor that Jeffers might have, albeit, I think, a relatively sinister humor. "I chose the bed downstairs by the sea window for a good deathbed when we built the house. It is ready, waiting, unused, unless by some guest in a 12-month who hardly suspects its latter purpose. I often regard it with neither dislike nor desire, rather with both, so equal that they kill each other off, and a crystalline interest remains alone. We are safe to finish what we have to finish, and then it will sound rather like music when the patient demon behind the screen of sea rock and sky thumps with his staff and calls thrice, 'Come, Jeffers.'" For Una. "I built her a tower when I was young. Sometimes she will die. I built it with my hands. I hung stones in the sky. Old but still strong, I climbed the stone. Sometimes she will die. Climb the steep rough steps alone and weep in the sky. Never weep. Never weep. Never be astonished, dear. Expect change. Nothing is strange. We have seen the human race capture all its dreams, all except peace. We have watched mankind like Christ toil up and up to be hanged at the top. No longer envying the birds that ancient prayer for wings granted. Therefore the heavy sky over London, stallion hoof, falls on the roofs. These are the falling years. They will go deep. Never weep. Never weep. with clear eyes explore the pit, watch the great fall with religious awe. It is not Europe alone that is falling into blood and fire. Decline and fall have been dancing in all men's souls for a long while. Sometime at the last gasp comes peace to every soul. Never to mine until I find out and speak the things that I know. Tomorrow I will take up that heavy poem again about Ferguson, deceived and jealous man who bawled for the truth, and failed to endure its first least gleam. That poem bores me, and I hope I will bore any sweet soul that reads it, being some ways my very self, but mostly my antipodes. But having waved the heavy artillery to fire, I must hammer on to the end. Tonight, dear, let's forget all that and the war, and annihilate ourselves a little beyond time. You with this Irish whiskey, I with red wine, while the stars go over the sleepless ocean, and sometime after midnight I'll pluck you a wreath of chosen ones. We'll talk about love and death, rock-solid themes, old and deep as the sea. Admit nothing more timely, nothing less real. While the stars go over the timeless ocean, and when they finish, we'll have spent the night well. Like to read just the last part of a poem called Drunken Charlie. I think it's interesting to note that Jeffers says there is a person in the poem called Give Your Heart to the Hawks. She lay in the stern of the boat, and her body sang like a lark. I curse the war makers. I curse those that run to the ends of the earth to exalt a system or save a foreign power or foreign trade. My boy was killed by a sea lion, and that was cruel, but it was clean. There are men plotting to kill a million boys for a dead dream. Oh, my dear, there are some things that are well worth fighting for. Fight to save a seagull's wings. That would be a sacred war. And in conclusion, I would like to read interesting short poem. Self-criticism in February. The bay is not blue, but somber yellow, with wrack from the battered sky. It is speckled with violent foam heads and tiger striped with long, lovely storm shadows. You love this better than the other mask. Better eyes than yours would feel the equal beauty in the blue. It is certain you have loved the beauty of storm disproportionately. But the present time is not pastoral, but founded on violence, pointed for more massive violence. Perhaps it is not perversity, but need that perceives the storm beauty. Well, bite on this. Your poems are too full of ghosts and demons and people like phantoms. How often lives are. And passions so strained that the clay mouths go praying for destruction. Alas, it is not an unusual life. To every soul at some time. But why insist on it? And now for the worst fault. You have never mistaken demon or passion or idealism for the real God. Then what is most disliked in those verses remains most true. Unfortunately, if only you could sing that God is love, or perhaps that social justice will soon prevail. I can tell lies in prose.